bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Got to give a quick shout out to the St. George Sunrise Market. Check them out if you haven't already this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. They are there nearly every Saturday at Segmiller Park there near Little Valley. So many amazing vendors. Awesome for the whole family. I take my kids. They've got lots of different produce. Homemade jewelry, artisans, artists, you name it. Such a cool, cool environment. So again, check them out. St. George Sunrise Market and line dancing as well, by the way. It's super fun. All right. So we've got so much to talk about today. I have with me here Chad Bennion. Chad, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome, Michelle. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So Chad is actually running for Utah State Senate for District 29, correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. And one of the things that we just have to talk about first, because this is so recent, we were both there. So on Saturday, we had the state Republican convention up in Salt Lake. And I'm just going to first start by reading this letter to the editor that I just submitted, because I don't know if they'll publish it or not. So I'm just going to put this out there because it really gives the preface of what we all experienced at state convention on Saturday.
So well, I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yes, thank you. At the Utah State Republican Convention on Saturday, we witnessed Governor Spencer Cox deliver one of the most condescending speeches I have ever heard. He insinuated delegates are associated with far-left cancel culture, then labeled us as far-right-wing extremists. He insinuated the delegates' votes don't matter, and some, including him, want the caucus system to fail. But don't worry, he was sure to tell us he loves us. It's not surprising he had to pay his way onto the primary ballot, as he lost by nearly 68% to the Republican nominee Phil Lyman. While expressing vocal grievance might open the door for some to play the victim card, it's not surprising that Governor Cox received a large array of booing from the informed delegates. While I can't agree in certain circumstances that booing can be inappropriate, in the case of an elected representative attempting to campaign as a Republican, I find the ability to boo or cheer to be a fundamental protected right as a freedom-loving American. Here's the thing. Governor Cox is in an elected position, which means he is accountable to we the people. We are not subordinates under control of a commanding colonel whose rank must be honored. The reality is, maybe we the people have not forgotten about the children he forced to wear masks for an entire school year under the guise of protecting grandma while he collected federal grant money at the expense of our children's safety and well-being. Maybe we find it highly inappropriate for our governor to be promoting mental health issues to middle school students when introducing himself with he/him pronouns. Meanwhile, mental health issues in our youth continue to rise. Certainly couldn't have anything to do with isolating them, masking them, and promoting DEI. Maybe we would prefer a governor who doesn't sign executive orders for COVID-19 vaccination plans while also receiving campaign donations from Pfizer. Maybe we find his promotion of DEI and racist scholarships for his first 3 years, followed by pretending he's against DEI during an election year, to be very disingenuous. Maybe we find the lack of concern for election integrity nothing short of gross negligence. Maybe we find it very presumptuous that he would pretend like we need him to save our family dinners as he sat down with a Democrat governor promoting a fake Disagree Better campaign, which really comes across as shut up and take it, even if you don't agree with me campaign. Maybe we find his toasting to President Biden, who has been one of the greatest threats to our children's futures and prosperity of America, to be a slap in the face. Meanwhile, most Americans are facing the highest costs for basic needs seen in our lifetime due to devastating effects of Bidenomics. Maybe we find it disturbing that he places his fists on his constituents when caught in a lie about smart cities. Maybe we haven't forgotten about his I don't care why, wear the damn mask campaign. Maybe we haven't forgotten about his lack of regard for the women and girls of our state when he vetoed the bill to keep men out of girls' sports. Maybe we find it disgusting that our tax dollars are being used to fund a billionaire's private business venture. Maybe we find his never-Trumper attitude more aligned with a 12-year-old schoolgirl than a supposedly Republican governor. Maybe we think using the position as the governor of a family-friendly state to make a declaration for an entire month to celebrate sexuality that contradicts the family unit to be incredibly counterproductive. Maybe we think being a safe haven to illegal immigrants through policy of providing illegal driver privilege licenses, ID cards, taxpayer-funded medical insurance, in-state college tuition, etc., to be a risk to our safety and security. Meanwhile, some of our own veterans are homeless on the streets. While we appreciate the sending of five people to the border during an election year that's great for optics, it seems to lack commitment to actual substance. Maybe we disagree with his attempts to centralize more executive power by attempting to appoint elected positions such as state school board and attorney general. So yes, I support freedom-loving Americans' right to boo or cheer for elected representatives. In fact, there is nothing more American than our very right to express our grievances. Utah needs true leadership, not a woke governor, quote, disagreeing better, all the way to full-blown totalitarianism. I am sure Spencer Cox, let's get this out of the way, I'm sure he might be a, quote, nice guy. And actually, I love him as a fellow imperfect child of God. My issue with him is as governor, which has threatened my children's futures. His performance as governor should be scrutinized if we care about this state. The best way to disagree better is to realize we deserve better. So I know that took some time, but I just had to get that out of the way because that really summarizes state convention. What are your thoughts on what we all witnessed?
You know, I think you summed it up great, Michelle, because I think the way we can really disagree better is with how we vote.
Absolutely.
Because in my case, the same way, I'm going up against a 16-year incumbent, and the reason I am is because he isn't voting the way his constituents want. And that goes on a myriad of issues, whether it's the Dixie State University name change, whether it's on the insurance for illegal immigrants, whether it's on tax issues, whether it's on the caucus convention system. And that's the problem, is that we have leaders now who want to really just tell us what they want to do, and we should just go along with it. And that's not how our system works.
Right. Absolutely. So all of those things that you mentioned, which I know are important to residents of Senate District 29, the name change at the university, which is associated with the cancel culture that we're seeing throughout really the whole United States right now, right? So we've not been immune to that.
Right. It's the cancel culture, woke ideology, political correctness, where they're just trying to promote an agenda.
Right.
And change our history and heritage. And if we don't stand up to these types of things, we will lose it all.
And it's Dawn Ipson that you are referring to that you're running against.
That's correct.
Who was also, by the way, on stage at state convention with Governor Spencer Cox. And he has been quoted saying that Spencer Cox has his full support. So that should right there. That tells me really everything I need to know.
Well, it does. It's just another example, too, of the things we were just talking about, how he's out of touch with his constituents. I went back and looked up from 4 years ago how the primary vote turned out here in Washington County. Now, 4 years ago, Hughes and Iverson got the most votes in the governor's race. And Spencer Cox, Deidre Henderson were third. But the total number of votes that was cast, they only got about a quarter of the votes cast in Washington County in 2020.
So this is Cox and Henderson in 2020 only received about 25% of Washington County.
That's correct. The other 75% went to the other candidates who were running, with Greg Hughes and Victor Iverson obtaining the most.
See, that's interesting because I think Governor Cox is in worse position of popularity now that we've witnessed all of the things that I just listed in my letter to the editor.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Those things that are happening. Plus, I mean, we haven't even talked about some of the things that are going on in the lieutenant governor's office. When you've got a lieutenant governor who thinks that there's no problem being on somebody's finance committee as the lieutenant governor,
right,
who's over campaign finances.
Derek Brown's finance committee.
who is supposed to be there to be impartial, and if there's a complaint with regards to a campaign disclosure or anything else, how can you be on anyone's finance committee as the lieutenant governor? It's a complete conflict.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, we're looking at the things that have happened just since the convention with Phil Lyman and his lieutenant governor. But it seems like they forget that the lieutenant governor's office also covered up the fact that Celeste Molloy was not registered as a Republican and then quietly hid that while they got her to sign. And this is on top of, you know, having been scrubbed from the rolls for not having voted in 4 of the last 6 elections.
Isn't that interesting how that works, where Celeste Molloy having some issues with residency and meeting the requirements, that was kind of just swept under the rug. The LG kind of put her thumb on the scale and made sure that went through and happened, and actually even sent a congratulatory text to Celeste. And then we have Phil Lyman, who they won't even allow him to come in the doors to sign up for his, to put his lieutenant governor on the books. They won't even let him do it, which is really, really interesting.
Right.
All of a sudden, you mean they care about making sure they're following all of the state election code and the state constitution? I mean, that's obviously debatable in this LG case with Phil Lyman, but it's interesting that all of a sudden they're scrutinizing him, where was the
much
scrutiny
more heavily
with Celeste?
Well, and I think it goes to, it's, we have elected officials who pick their preferences. They pick their allies. They pick the people who they want to see in office, who they believe are more aligned with their views and not necessarily their constituents or the residents of the state of Utah, you know, depending on which race you're in, whether it's a district race, whether it's a statewide race. And it's really important that people see what's happening because, you know, it's very difficult to really go through someone's voting record without really scrutinizing, digging in to each day and each vote on every issue to find out how somebody's voting. We do have a lot of organizations in this state, whether it's the Taxpayers Association, Grassroots, even UEA, they have their rankings, but they're looking at particular topics and subjects, and that's really one of the few ways that you can actually look at somebody's voting record and know how they're doing.
Right. Yeah, and one thing that I feel is so important that a lot of Utahns may not even realize how important it is our caucus convention system, which we are pretty unique here, where we truly have this grassroots effort, where we truly have the form of government that I believe is what the founders envisioned, where you elect people within your neighborhood closest to the people to then go to a convention who can really take time to vet candidates. And that's what we did. Many of us state delegates spent hours and hours vetting candidates, going to meetings, really getting to know these candidates so that we could cast our vote and be an informed voter.
Yes.
But yet we have people like Don Ipsen who supported a path that's contrary to the caucus convention system.
He has, and he's one of only 2 Republican senators who, when Senator McKay ran the bill a few years ago to get rid of that signature provision, he was one of only 2 Republican senators to vote against it.
Wow.
So, you know, one of the things I said at convention where I was fortunate enough to come through with a victory and be the top vote getter.
By the informed delegates, by the
right
way. If you notice, every single candidate who won convention at state convention, as well as our county convention, those were the true grassroots, true conservative candidates. So, I mean, I hope that carries into the primary, but that tells you when people are informed and truly know the facts, they elect people like Chad Benyon.
They do. And that's one of the reasons, too, why it's rather interesting, but my opponent has not come at my record, because when you do the comparison, I'm actually much more conservative. He has a lifetime rating with Grassroots of 44. I have a lifetime rating of 70, which is a huge difference, particularly when you're in what is arguably the most Republican and conservative district in the state of Utah.
Right.
In Senate District 29 here in southwestern Utah.
And let's talk about your history then, because you've been a member of the State House of Representatives before, right?
I was 20 years ago. My youngest just graduated last year from Snow Canyon. And so I just thought it was time to get involved again, particularly with all the people who were talking to me about these representation issues.
Right.
And, you know, I was fortunate 20 years ago to be in the House for three terms, was the chair of the Commerce and Revenue Appropriations Subcommittee, was the vice chairman of the Rules Committee, sat on the Judiciary Committee, Public Utilities and Technology. And that's the public utilities is still a huge one right now because we shouldn't be giving up our generation capacity for solar, wind, green, whatever, while it's still viable, lest we end up like Texas and California in the summertime where we're not generating enough power for our needs. That's just crazy to do anything like that. And that's the type of issue that I will stand firm on to make certain that we keep our independence on energy generation. And I promote an America First agenda on that because our energy is so important to us throughout the state of Utah, whether it's the oil shell, whether it's the electrical generation, it all plays an important role in our energy independence.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate that you bring a lot of experience already to the table. But the other thing that I really appreciate about you is long before this Senate race, I have always seen you at almost every single event, whether it's to support other good conservative candidates, whether it's, you know, just liberty events. You know, I always see you present. I don't think I've ever seen Don Hipson at any event. In fact, I don't really know him very well because he's never at those type of events. So well, I appreciate that you show up and you're relevant. You know what's going on. You're truly in touch with the people, it seems.
I appreciate that, Michelle, because I've tried to stay involved. Even though I may not be the candidate, might not be the person who's in the spotlight, I support the causes where we have ballot integrity.
Absolutely.
Election integrity. I actually went down in 2020 and went into Clark County to canvass down there because of the problems that they had. And that's a whole another podcast in and of itself just to talk about those things that happened there.
Yeah.
But it's I think it's important upon and incumbent upon all of us. If we want to have good government, if we want good people to be in office, we need to be doing our homework and working with our neighbors to hold our elected officials accountable and make certain that they are doing the things that represent us, that they promote prosperity, that they keep taxes low, that they promote legal immigration, not illegal immigration, which is a huge issue right now for us as a state because we have policies that are promoting illegal immigrants to come to the state.
Policies that your opponent has voted in favor of, correct?
He has. In 2023, there was a bill that gave insurance to illegal immigrants, you know, children primarily. And me as your state senator, one of the first things I will do in office is I will go to Ledge Research, pull every policy, every statute that we have right now that incentivizes illegal immigration and benefits to illegal immigrants in the state of Utah and repeal them. Because I don't believe the state, particularly tax dollars, should be used for any of those purposes, particularly promoting illegal activities. And if we want to have safety, to secure the border, we have to do things like that. But yet you listen to what's coming from many of our elected officials, and they're telling us, no, we're not doing anything to promote illegal immigrants coming to the state. We're protecting our borders. It's just not so.
Right. Yeah, like you're saying, it's through policy. We may not be this technical designated sanctuary state, although ICE did at one point refer to us as that, but they quickly had to reverse that memo and they received a lot of pushback. But like you're saying, through these policies, and the interesting thing, as I've talked to actually some state legislators who I highly respect and really align with on most things, some of them didn't even realize that that was there. It's like, if you're not really paying attention, these things sneak in to the legislation. And there are several instances, I think you mentioned as well, we're paying for college tuition of illegal immigrants. Is that true?
Yep. You know, we have given waivers to schools, just like our own university here, to be able to give in-state tuition to anyone who they deem deserves it.
I'm still paying off student loans. Where was my free waiver as an American citizen?
Well, I think Joe Biden's trying to do something about that, Michelle, but I doubt you're going to go for that. So
I don't go for that.
And you know, the thing is, too, I just want to be clear about this, too. Look, do we have compassion for children? Absolutely.
Right.
But it should be through our religious organizations, churches, charities, because I know my own faith helps refugees, helps people who are down on their luck, need assistance.
Absolutely.
But that's their role, not state government.
Exactly. And forced charity is not charity, it's theft.
Right. And that's just it. And that's why I think we really need to go through and scrutinize every one of these areas. And as our state senator, that'll be some of the first legislation I propose.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that's really vital given our current situation with the border right now. I don't think the five people that Spencer Cox for Optics sent down is going to really do what's necessary to truly secure our border and this opioid crisis we have with a 600% increase just coming through I-15 through Washington County since Biden took office.
The narcotics trafficking, human trafficking, all of that's occurring. And without being able to identify these individuals who are coming across the border, I mean, we have foreign nationals from China. How come we've got so many people coming? I'll tell you, my concern is that we have people who are either terrorists, we have cells that are being developed, we have cartel members that are coming to go ahead and expand the drug trade, human trafficking, criminal activities. These things we've got to get a handle on, and we've got to do everything we can to stop the illegal activity and definitely not be promoting it with state tax dollars.
Absolutely. And you work with the Sheriff's Association, is that right?
Actually, I work with the correctional officers and adult parole and probation agents.
Okay.
So, you know, these issues, and we've had some huge issues with the new prison, with assaults since that new facility opened. I appreciate the new director we have is really working hard, Brian Redd. But it took a long effort to get the change from who Governor Cox first appointed, who just wasn't listening to people, who, you know, in my view, just didn't have the skill set to be over that agency. I actually talked to Greg Hughes at one point and said, you know, Greg, if you'd have won as governor, I would have expected some political appointments, but I would also have expected them to be able to do the job and do it successfully.
Right.
And that's what we should be expecting from any political appointment, because right. We know they're going to occur, but there's got to be competency along with that appointment.
Absolutely. So what are your thoughts on, because it really feels like with, you know, now witnessing our county convention where you came out as the top vote getter, and then we just had our state convention, obviously, where we have Phil Lyman moving forward as the nomination, Trent Staggs,
Frank Mylar,
who was on the podcast last week. We have Colby Jenkins, who was the top vote getter for Congress. So really all of the candidates who I love are moving forward, but now going into the primary, for those who don't understand, so the informed delegates voted these people through, they have the Republican nominee, but now the primary election is coming up June 25th. Ballots are going to be mailed out here in just maybe 3 weeks. So yeah, like this is coming soon.
They'll start being mailed out about June 4th. I would expect most of them to hit the residents of Washington County by the 10th.
Okay.
But that's why it's important. You know, that's why I'm hosting events. I'm going to different things. I'm coming on podcasts with you. I'm walking neighborhoods because it's that important. And I want people to know who I am because, like I said, my opponent's been in for 16 years. He's got a lot of signs right now. We're gonna do something about that shortly. But the reality is he saved those up. But as old as the signs are, his positions are not in line with the residents of the district.
Right. And
because I've worked with him. I've done some things with him. He's done some good things. But the reality is when you look at all these big issues, and I said this at convention, in the last 4 years, what's changed or what have we lost? We lost the name of the university. We lost an opportunity to get rid of the signature path for the caucus convention system. We've got tax issues that the legislature promoted, and there are those that still want to see changes, but the citizens rose up against them. We've got corporate welfare going on with bills to promote stadiums. And somehow I missed that in the Utah State Constitution, where that is, that, you know, we should be building. That's
so
the role of state government.
You wouldn't have championed funding a billionaire Gail Miller's pet project, Major League Baseball Stadium in northern Utah, and hold actual projects that should be funded, such as at the airport,
look,
and such as our reservoir. You wouldn't hold those projects over our head if we don't want to fund Gail Miller.
We've got water projects. We've got transportation issues, particularly down here with the growth. You know, there's so many higher priorities that I would have had than funding stadiums. And particularly, too, you know, and we talked about this a little bit ago about we went up for the convention this last weekend as delegates, right?
Right.
And a lot of people stayed in hotels. A lot of people rented cars from the airport. Well, we're all paying taxes. They say that it's going to be from out-of-state people visiting Utah who are going to pay for these stadiums. Well, no, it's not. Anybody who's off the Wasatch Front and has to go to Salt Lake for business, for any type of special event, for a sporting activity, go to the Delta Center, watch the Jazz.
Right.
You know, we're all paying every time we go there because we're not on the Wasatch Front.
Right. Well, and I want that to sink in for people for a minute, because we had a bill killed at this last legislative session for EMS,
for first
emergency
responders.
Medical services, which, what's the proper role of government? Protect life, liberty, and property, and emergency services are a huge part of that. So that bill gets killed, yet we are being, as Utahns, forced to fund Major League Baseball. Like, let that sink in. Hockey. What is going on? Could it be that Gail Miller has helped funded some of these politicians' campaigns? Could that possibly be it? What do you think, Chad?
Gosh, that would never happen, Michelle.
And where was Don Ipsen's voice? Because he voted for the Major League Baseball stadium.
He did.
If he has so much power, which I keep hearing is, we have to vote him in because he has so much power. Where was his power in funding our EMS? Why did that bill get killed?
Well, where was his power to stop the Dixie name change? Where was his power to protect and promote the caucus convention system? You know, it's not there. It's a great talking point. But that's all it is, because the reality is, with my prior experience and knowing how the process works, I would be able to get funding issues through working with my colleagues and working with the House members, because, you know, it's got to pass both bodies.
Right.
And so these types of things, they sound really good, and they try to promote kind of like what we saw through COVID, or I can remember it from 9/11, fear.
Right.
Fear in the public that, oh, no, we've got to do this because if we don't, everything's going to go bad.
Right.
You know, fear is a huge motivator. And we saw that through COVID.
Absolutely.
With how the media portrayed things compared to what really happened. And the harm that it did to our children, the freedoms that we lost. I mean, you could go to a strip club easier than a church in Nevada.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
And all of these people who are up for re-election right now, if there is an incumbent running, it means they were very likely in office in 2020. Where was their voice? Were they, I remember little clips from Don Ipsen going right along with the propaganda, as well as most of our other incumbents who are up for re-election right now. Where was their voice when people were losing their jobs for not getting the you-know-what? Where was their voice our children were forced to wear masks?
I had a constituent and a delegate at the convention who shared with me back in 2020. So this is long before I even ran or even was really thinking about running again for anything, who sent the incumbent senator, Senator Ipsen, a message via text through his state phone asking where he was in supporting the resolution to eliminate the COVID restrictions, right?
Yeah.
Well, three weeks went by, no response. So this constituent of his, a little frustrated, says, you know, I think I deserve an answer. I help pay for your public salary. I think I deserve to know where you stand. Well, this time the response was much more forthcoming, where he goes through, says why he's not going to support it because he doesn't support pledges, which that's another issue. But then goes through and says, my W-2 form will show $20,000 for this year. Your portion of that is 6.7 cents. Now, anybody who would say that to a constituent who's trying to ask the public to support them in office, that's not the attitude you should have. You know, if it had been me and I had had a text like that, I would say, you know, I apologize. I've been really busy on different issues. You know, if it was a position I couldn't support, I'd say, I'm sorry, I can't support that, and then give them the reasons why, or just say, you know what, I'm sorry it took so long. No, I'm going to support that. You would never say something right. that condescending to a constituent.
It's all of the sudden clicking why Ipsen and Governor Cox get along so well. I think they think they're above us. What do you think? I mean, as they were standing up there on stage at state convention, and of course, the only profanity I heard all day came from the county commissioner who Governor Cox had introduced him, yeah. who claimed that we were stating BS all day. But of course, he said the word. And then it was interesting because then I saw Deidre Henderson come on afterwards and tweet, the convention is no longer family friendly. There's so much vitriol and hate. And I'm thinking the only profanity I heard came actually from their people. But as you're talking about, we're apparently only worth 6.7 cents to our own senator. I mean, that's really aligned with this elitist mentality that we see from our very own governor. And I see this election coming up really being the battle between the elitist establishment who think they have the power, they have the money, big money funding them.
Right.
Because we all know where big money usually comes from. And then we have the true grassroots conservatives. And you are one of those. The only way to get people like you in there is for we the people, the grassroots efforts, to step up, to make an effort to be informed, to inform our neighbors.
It is. Because I think a lot of times there's a real danger. I mean, I was up on Capitol Hill for 6 years. And there's a real danger if you begin believing your press clippings, good or bad.
Right.
Right. And when you begin to think that you know better than your constituency, because whether you're in the House, whether you're in the Senate, whether you're the governor, you're there to represent your constituents so that they have a voice in government and that their positions are being heard. And that's the biggest disconnect right now in our local state Senate seat, whether it's apparently from the state convention Saturday, the governor.
Right.
You know, because, you know, 4 years ago, he got 55% of the convention, was the highest vote getter.
Wow.
This time, 32.48. You know, and what's changed? The representation and what he said and holding people accountable, because we want elected officials who represent us.
Absolutely. And that 32% that you're talking about that he got, I guarantee you, if the delegates' votes weren't transparent, that number would be much lower, because I know that there are many who are too afraid to not vote for certain people because right. of ramifications of, well, no. what if he does get reelected and then he doesn't help pass my legislation, or...
And Michelle, that's a real issue here in Washington County, because, you know, the unions used to have open votes like that too, and they would use those to pressure people to vote a certain way.
Right.
Now, we're watching the same thing happen with certain candidates in certain races. I mean, you look at leadership races in the House or Senate in Utah. Are they open? Do you know how everybody voted? No, they're closed. And the same thing should be happening here, because what it's doing is pressuring people.
I agree.
You know, and we should make certain that any ballot, you know, except on issues, just like we do with the House members, the Senate members, the governor, if he vetoes something, it's open. You know that it was a veto. If it's a vote on a bill, you know, if it's a yay or a nay from the Senate or the House.
Right.
Those things that are public policy, those should be open. Even within the party, those things should be known. But when it comes down to people who you're electing, leadership, those things should be closed.
Would you be willing, once you're in, to repeal SB 54? And for those who don't understand SB 54, that is the bill that we were referencing early that was supported by Ipsen and many others to allow candidates who can't get voted through by the grassroots conservatives who are elected to actually be informed, they can actually buy their way onto the ballot, which is what Spencer Cox just did.
And, you know, in any place in the state, the delegates are being elected from their neighbors.
Right.
Right? And so people are being represented. I mean, you take a look at the founding of this country, right? It wasn't pure democracy. It was representative government. We had representatives at the Constitutional Convention from each of the states, from the 13 colonies at that time.
Right.
Okay? And they represented their constituency. We need to have people who are thoughtful, who are going there for a purpose to protect the public and to protect our freedoms and liberties. And that's where I see the biggest disconnect right now. Now, we've got a lot of people who will tell you they're doing one thing, but that it's just like when we talk about the policies on illegal immigration. Oh, we're not a sanctuary state. We're not doing anything to promote illegal immigrants coming to Utah. Well, they say that, but it's just simply not so.
Right.
And so we've got to get people in who are going to do what they say and say what they mean. Because I'll tell you what, my biggest takeaway from the convention this past weekend is that delegates are simply tired of having someone tell them they'll do something and they don't do it, or they go the other way, or they misrepresent to them what they said they will do.
Right.
And I think people are really just fed up with it.
Absolutely, yeah, because what happens, it feels like, is people get elected, and that's why I appreciate that you have the experience already of being in an elected position and knowing how the cool kids club works, because, I mean, even at the local level, it's like once you're an elected representative, there are certain pressures that come at you from every direction, and it's almost like high school where it's like people just want to fit in and you want to be part of the cool kids club, and, well, this senior senator who's been there forever is telling you you've got to vote this way, and then he'll scratch your back next time if you scratch his this time, and it becomes this back-scratching club. That is what politics is a back-scratching club.
Well,
how do you overcome that?
It can be. The thing is, you've got to know where you are. And for me, you know, when I was in previously, there was a time that I worked for the Salt Lake County Council. And Salt Lake County went through and ranked all the legislators in the House, 75 of them, as to how friendly they were to Salt Lake County. And of the 75, I was one of the few who worked for Salt Lake County. Of the 75, I was 75th in friendliness. And why? Why was that so?
Which isn't a bad thing in my book.
but the reason was because my constituents at that time were in Murray and Midvale. And their issues were 180 degrees opposite of the county. I represented my constituents, not my job. And you can be sure that if I'm elected to the Senate, I will represent my constituents, not my own interest. And the other thing with that is, too, is that, you know, I hear some people say, well, you've only lived here for 10 years now. Well,
in St. George, you
yes,
mean.
In St. George. And I'm telling you right now, it's not the length of time you live somewhere as an elected official. It's how well do you represent your constituents. And I'll tell you what, I will do a much better job than our incumbent has done. And 2 years from now, 4 years from now, when you talk with me, you're going to see that. And if I can't get your support, I don't deserve to be a senator, and I will not ever gather signatures.
Thank you. I appreciate that from you. So we're down to just about a minute left. I'll leave you with any closing remarks that you want to leave anyone watching this video with, and then also make sure people know how to find you and support you.
You bet. Get ready, because the June 25th primary is coming up pretty soon. If you'd like more information, please go to votebenyon.com. That's my website. We have links to a bunch of issues, the legislative website. You can find out more information. And if you want to contact me directly, feel free to give me a call at area code 435-767-3050. That's my direct number.
And I want to just say real quick, too, what I like about your website is some of the criticism I've heard is, oh, Chad's lying about that, or, oh, Don didn't support the name change. But if you go to your website, you actually have links to bills that were sponsored by him. That was what kind of opened the door and paved the way for the name change to even happen. So it's not like you're just pulling these things out of your hat.
No, these are all from the legislative website.
Right. And I like your slogan of tough on issues, soft on people. Is that right?
Hard on issues.
Hard on issues.
Soft on people.
Soft on people. Because that is. That's, you know, we can love one another, but we can also be true to the facts. So thanks, everyone, for watching. Thanks so much, Chad, for coming on and putting yourself out there for Senate.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
This has been a production from a podcast studio.